While there are several beautiful Hindu and Buddhist temples in Los Angeles, today I decided to attend Sunday service at the Self-Realization Fellowship Lake Shrine, a few blocks from the Pacific Ocean on Sunset Boulevard in the Pacific Palisades, California. It has a regular temple service every Sunday for people of any religious faith, which consists of a one-hour lecture and is then open for individual meditation and prayer. Founded in 1950, the Lake Shrine was envisioned as a church of all religions by Paramahansa Yogananda just 2 years before his death. He was an Indian Hindu monk and yogi that taught Kriya Yoga to the West, which mainly consists of a number of levels of pranayama, mantra, and mudra. Pranayama is the yogic practice of focusing on breath, where in Sanskrit, prana means vital life force, and yama means to gain control. In yoga, breath is associated with the prana, so pranayama is a means to elevate the prana shakti, or life energies. In Hinduism and Buddhism, a mantra is a word or sound repeated to aid concentration and meditation. Sufis do this too, and not only does it help the practitioner achieve an altered state to bypass the ego, the vibrational sounds, which are based on the vowels, helps the chi or prana move up the spine and circulate around the body. And finally, a mudra is a gesture of the hand, fingers, and body that can often be seen in Buddhist statues and other visual art and dance, but in an esoteric context has to do with harnessing, amplifying, and circulating chi, prana, vril, or life force energy. Some of the lesser known aspects of this ancient technique were revealed by the founder of the German Thule Society, Baron Rudolf von Sepetendorf, in his book, The Secret Practices of the Sufi Freemasons, the Islamic Teachings at the Heart of Alchemy. He was a German occultist, intelligence agent, and member of the secretive Sufi Bektashi order that influenced other German sects, such as the Vril Society, that had many members that became part of the German Nationalist Socialist Party. According to Yogananda, by harnessing one's sex energy and performing these various breathing and posture techniques, quote, the Kriya Yogi mentally directs his life energy to revolve upward and downward around the six spinal centers which correspond to the 12 astral signs of the zodiac, the symbolic cosmic man. This method allegedly leads to a certain purification of the blood, which frees up the life force to withdraw into the spine. Yogananda claimed that while the Bhagavad Gita does not teach the Kriya Yoga by name, the practice was described there. Quote, by recharging the blood and cells with life force energy that has been distilled from breath and reinforced with the pure spiritualized life force in the spine and brain, the yogi thus attains conscious life force control. That said, no exploration into yoga, tantra, and meditation would be complete without a look at the ancient lineage of sacred plants and herbs that many assert are, at least in part, at the origins of religious experience and esoteric spirituality. This presentation is not to advocate for any psychoactive substance, which can be powerful tools for some, and like any tools, they can cut both ways, helping or harming. Paracelsus offered a great guiding principle when he pointed out that the difference between a medicine and a poison is dosage or usage. Soma was an ancient brew or drink prepared by sages and yogis that was said to bestow health, vitality, strength, insight, spiritual visionary experience, and communion with the divine. This sacred drink, also called Amrita or Nectar of the Gods, allegedly opens the mind, heart, and inner landscape while purifying the body and nourishing the soul or subtle energetic body. The word Amrita means nectar from the word Mrita, which means death. So Amrita means non-death or immortality in a spiritual context, not physical immortality. There are many theories pertaining to the actual ingredients of this sacred beverage, with one of the more popular theories linking it to psychoactive mushrooms known as psilocybin or magic mushrooms, or possibly from a combination of plants, which are said to provide synergetic effects when taken together. Ancient texts describe some of its properties to be that of an aphrodisiac, meaning it furthers sexual arousal and enhances blissful or orgasmic energetic exchange. Other attributes listed in the Avesta, which are sacred religious texts of Iran, are that it stimulates alertness and awareness, furthers healing, is physically strengthening, is nourishing and nutritious for the soul, and can be consumed without negative side effects. The term soma is common in India, where in Iran, one may hear it called homa, allegedly derived from a divine plant in Zoroastrianism and in Aryan culture and mythology. Both the Avestan or Iranian homa and Sanskrit soma are derived from Proto-Indo-Iranian soma. Proto means before, so in other words, the actual ancient Aryans, which are thousands of years removed from modern times. Old Persian cuneiform makes reference to homa-drinking Scythians, which were a group of Aryan tribes that also penetrated into Europe and are hardly discussed in Western schools. Fortunately, Scythians or Aryans are still discussed by Russian scholars.
Archaeological digs have shown that the ancient town was inhabited by the forebears of the Aryan race.
Those ancient Aryans were credited with everything on Earth. They were even said to have discovered metals.
The Rig Veda shows that they fought battles among themselves, and they called themselves Aryans. Take the word for father, pater in Greek and pater in Latin, is pitta in Sanskrit. The word for mother, mater in Latin, mitter in Greek, in Sanskrit is matar. And most amazing, the key word for horse in Sanskrit, asva, is exactly the same thousands of miles away in Lithuania. No philologer could examine all three, said Jones, without believing them to have sprung from some common source. We now know that Jones was right. And though this is now hugely controversial in the subcontinent, most linguists agree the common source lay outside India. So where had Sanskrit come from? In the Rig Veda lies the key. When this text was written down, it had already been passed down orally for more than 2,500 years. In the Rig Veda, there are many clues to the origin of the Sanskrit-speaking peoples. First, the Rig Vedic gods are not originally Indian. Then there's the chariots and horses. Horses are not known in the Indus civilization, and yet they're a key part of the society of the Rig Veda.
And it was very familiar animal to them. And I think that they tamed the horse at a very early period. This is the first movement of Aryans.
Is this the name they called themselves? What does it mean?
It actually means the civilized, the sabhya, the socialized, civilized person.
Yes, refined.
Civilized,
yeah.
Defined person.
Yeah.
And so they use the word Arya.
That's what they call themselves.
Yeah.
One of the great Russian archaeologists. He's been excavating out here in the wilds for many years.
The material culture here is the mirror image of the Aryans of the Rig Veda and their ancient Iranian cousins who followed the Zoroastrian religion.
This is where the Soma Homa yes. was prepared, the yes. sacred drink,
mm-hmm.
in,
yes.
this in this kind of bowl.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What were the ingredients of the sacred drink? What went into it?
It is some ingredient.
Yeah.
Poppy.
Cannabis.
Ephedra.
Yeah. Have you tasted?
No.
Have you made today?
We probably.
I don't know.
It's a wonderful, tantalizing mystery, isn't it? The Aryans, a cluster of languages that would become modern English, German, French, Latin and Greek, Persian and Sanskrit. They had a class of priests who performed fire rituals at special altars and made the sacred, intoxicating drink.
So, according to archaeological analysis, the partial list of ingredients used to make soma is poppy, which is where opium comes from, cannabis, which is also known as hashish or marijuana, and ephedra, a plant with methamphetamine-like properties, which the Zoroastrians of Yazd, Iran, use and export to the Indian Zoroastrians, as the plant requires a cool and dry climate and does not grow in India. This specific variant of ephedra is only cultivated in the Yazd province of Iran, and the word Yazd means God. After the Arab conquest of Iran, many Zoroastrians migrated to Yazd from neighboring provinces, and by paying a levy, Yazd was allowed to remain Zoroastrian even after its conquest, and Islam only gradually became the dominant religion in the city. Another esoteric aspect of the Yazd ephedra, which is also similar to caffeine, is that it must also undergo a fermentation process, which promotes psychoactive properties, making it effectively a hallucinogen as well. Yazd is also very well known for its Zoroastrian fire temples, the place of worship for the followers of Zoroastrianism, the religion of the ancient Aryans of Iran, who have maintained the lit flame consistently burning for over 1500 years.
So we're visiting the Zoroastrian fire temple today. You will probably visit it if you come to Yazd. And that's the fire. This fire has been burning for like 1500 years, more than that. It has been moved from city to city, but it has not been put out ever since. Yeah, and here we're two museums, so I'll go around them just to show you a peek. That's Ahura Mazda, that's the portrait of God in the Zoroastrian. And their book is called Avesta. It's five parts.
That said, some interesting evidence has been discovered in the iconography employed in an ancient rug discovered in the year 2010, which depicts figures conjectured to be those of kings, priests, and even warriors, one of whom is holding an object strongly resembling a mushroom with a large cap. This within the context of what appears to be an offering forming part of a Homa ritual performed next to fire. While psilocybin mushrooms or other fermented ingredients may have been used for their psychoactive properties, another likely ingredient, which is also harvested in Iran, is saffron, a popular and very expensive spice. Saffron is often recommended as an aphrodisiac derived from the Crocus sativus flower. It's native to Southwest Asia and one of the most expensive spices by weight, often used as an alternative remedy to help treat depression, reduce stress, enhance mood, and according to Iranian researchers from the Pharmacology and Toxicology Department of Mashhad University of Medical Sciences, the saffron extract called crokin was effective in boosting sexual stamina and libido.
These Iranian women harvest the world's most expensive spice, saffron. 90% of its global production grows here in Iran's Khorasan province, eventually finding its way to Spanish paellas, Indian curries, and Swedish saffron buns, making this region a crucial part of global cuisine.
Even in the expensive world of spices, saffron stands out. And real saffron can cost you over $10,000 per kilogram. Sought after for thousands of years as a spice, a dye, and a medicine, you need over 150 flowers to make just 1 gram of saffron. And the stuff you have at home in the cupboard could well be fake. Saffron is the red stigma of the Crocus sativus. Each crocus has 3 small stigmas that have to be picked carefully by hand. This minuscule harvest means that the amount you get from each flower is roughly 0.006 grams. No machine can do the delicate work required to harvest these thin threads. And it can take 40 hours of hard manual labor to produce just 1 kilogram of high-quality saffron. In Greek mythology, Zeus sometimes slept on a bed of saffron, and Cleopatra was said to bathe in saffron and milk, using the dyeing properties of the spice as an ancient fake tan. Every culture seems to have its own myth about the spice's powers. Kashmir is famed for producing some of the highest quality saffron in the world.
In all of Kashmir, this red soil is mostly found here. And this red soil is naturally fertilized for saffron. The lands of other areas require quite a lot of hard work. You need to put things like compost in it, but this red soil is strong from inside because Allah is a gift from nature, and this is quite famous all over the world. I decided to stop for lunch at Thai Dishes in Santa Monica, which also uses ingredients such as mussels and oysters, renowned since antiquity for being aphrodisiacs, along with ginger, which has a gentle warming effect that may increase blood flow and heighten senses. Thai basil, sometimes called holy basil, is also revered as an ingredient as it is thought to also boost circulation and improve libido. And while it isn't exactly soma, I couldn't resist their Thai iced tea, which is very sweet and really hits the spot. While the ingredients of the mythical soma seem to revolve around ingredients known for their aphrodisiac properties, the true mystery behind the sacred drink is not simply carnal activity, but to prolong and intensify the sacred rituals to achieve heightened states of consciousness where the initiate can then experience for themselves what is meant by spiritual immortality. Whether it be the Iranian Mithraic mysteries or the Greek Eleusinian mysteries, the end phenomena is the same and cannot be explained academically but must be experienced subjectively, which is the big secret at the core of all ancient mystery school religions. That while the universe appears to be comprised of many separate individual moving parts, this is an illusion, and the underlying truth is that everything is connected, that the universe itself is of one mind, one soul, experiencing itself through a multitude of different perspectives. The most notable theme of the mysteries is the experience of death before death. This means that the rituals were meant to induce epiphanies of the afterlife by making the participant experience a mind-expanding psychedelic voyage, often by ingesting a beverage, which in the Greek version of the ritual was called kaikion, which was made of barley and mint, but also infused with psychotropic fungus ergot, known to produce LSD-like effects. And this, then, heightened the experience and helped transform the initiate. After drinking it, the participants entered the telesterion, an underground theater where the secret ritual took place, which involved ritualistic acts and resulted in ecstatic bliss, where the initiate could temporarily transcend mortal existence and merge with the cosmic mind. The climax of the ritual is the experience of dying without actually dying and coming back to daily life with this knowledge and without sharing it with anyone. Those who entered in would come out the next morning radically changed. Virtually every important thinker and writer in antiquity, anyone who was anyone, was an initiate of the mysteries. One of the most reputable historians in the world, Will Durant, states of the mysteries, quote, "In this ecstasy of revelation, they felt the unity of God and the oneness of God and the soul. They were lifted up out of the delusion of individuality and knew the peace of absorption into deity." Cicero, a Roman statesman familiar with the Eleusinian mysteries, writes, quote, "Nothing is higher than these mysteries. They have not only shown us how to live joyfully, but they have taught us how to die with a better hope." The mystic person was one who had experienced the secrets, but would not share them verbally. Instead, the mystic preferred to offer the experience itself to those who were prepared. That said, you do not need to use any psychedelics to have access to the mysteries. And after the initiate learns how to activate and navigate the internal landscape, they can then manipulate it in a way to induce a specific type of transformative experience that could be revisited mentally even without the use of any mind-expanding substances. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.